Hello, welcome to episode number 203 of the Apolog Podcast. I'm your host, Simon Head. Today's podcast is brought to you in part by BetterHelp.com. Get affordable private online counseling anytime, anywhere. Talk with a licensed professional therapist online today. It saves a few things. First of all, it saves you money, saves you time, and it saves you a lot of grief. So if you want to get a 7-day trial, use the code word Apolog by going to betterhelp.com/Apolog and get therapied up. I'd like to thank everybody for shopping on Amazon and supporting the show. You too can do the same thing by going to apolog.ca/Amazon or apolog.ca/US Amazon. You can do it the old-fashioned way too by going to apolog.ca and click on the banners located on the right side. Locate your country. Go from there, bookmark all those links, and every time you shop on Amazon, use the links to shop and support the show. It costs you no extra money. I'd like to thank everybody for supporting the show on Patreon. You can, too, become a patron by going to patreon.com/Apolog and pledge as much or as little as you want on a monthly basis to help with hosting and gas fees, and you can cancel at any time. Buy a t-shirt, apolog.ca/shop. Don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review the show on iTunes. Give it 5 stars, please, and like the show on Facebook by going to facebook.com/apologpod. Follow me on Twitter at simonhead666. Today on the show, I have Mr. Adam Ludica. Adam Ludica is formerly of the band called Punch Buggy. Punch Buggy is an old band from the late 90s, and well, mid to late 90s. Adam also used to be in a band called Uncommon Society, which is another punk rock band based out of Ottawa, the Ottawa region. Adam and his wife, Rochelle, are going through one of the hardest things ever. Rochelle is now having to have some treatment for cancer. And Adam started a GoFundMe page, and they met their goal within 3 days, 4 days, something like that. And there's still a big fight to go and still a lot of work and a lot of treatment that needs to happen based on the fact because they're from the United States and they have to pay for everything. But everybody, I'm going to put the GoFundMe link, if it's still there, I'll put it there, and you can still pledge and help Adam's cause out. And it's good. It's good that people, that punk rock somewhat banded together again, what, something 30 years later, and helped the cause. So here he is, my good friend Adam Ludica on the Apolog Podcast. Month in Europe, in France.
A month in France.
Wow.
So we basically stayed in Limoges the whole time, and then we did shows from Thursday to Sunday. Then we went back to Limoges and just hang out and drank, and so much fun. It was just unbelievable. We had such a great time, and it was so funny. We ended up going. We were on tour with a French band and Super Dwarves, they were called. And we would go every morning. We would go to get food and stuff, and they would. We would go get baguettes and get, like, back then, I don't think they had it in Canada or US. It was Bashki Lee, like Laughing Cow.
Yeah,
and they would just like laugh at us. They're like, you guys are in like the land of cheese, and you're getting the worst cheese ever. And we were so stoked on it. We were just Orangina and baguettes and Bashki Lee.
Well, when I went to Europe, there was a weird cheese. Speaking of cheese, we're recording, by the way. Might as well just start. Speaking of cheese, when we first went to Europe in 2003, cheese was like so cheap. I couldn't believe how cheap it was, because like a huge brick of brie at home seemed like to be like $15-$20, whereas like €4 in Germany.
Yeah,
it was like crazy. So we're like feasting on cheese. Like, this is the best.
I love that. Yeah, cheese is so good to begin with. And then to get it cheap, and it's like real cheese, and it's super good. Yeah, that's awesome, man.
You went out there, you went to Europe with, to France with Punch Buggy, or is that?
Yeah. Well, you know what? Common Society wouldn't have made that trip. you know what's so funny? A side note, this is going to be kind of boring, like podcast fodder, but Al tagged me on a photo yesterday or a couple days ago of someone in Hype We put Hype on, the band Hype from Toronto. We put them on Sault Ste. Marie. I think it was with SNFU on the Better Than the Stick in the Eye tour.
Okay, like, yeah.
1988, because I remember calling Gubby and I booked the tour and for the Sioux. I think I was like 17. Anyway, there's a picture of some guy in Hype taking a piss, and he had like literally, he had an Uncommon Society shirt because we opened, but I think there's literally like maybe 50 of them in existence, and to see it, and it turns out the guy still has it. Anyway, it's a bit of a trip.
Yeah, well, Mikey from the Fairmounts, he used to be in the Surfers. He says hi, by the way, the Inner City Surfers.
He's the best dude. I love him, man. He's great.
Yeah, yeah. He says hi and wishes you all the best. Because
I talked to him on Facebook. Yeah, he's old friend as you are. So yeah, it's great.
Yeah. Yeah, we hung out. We hung out just yesterday, just recording some guitars and stuff. That was
That's why I was asking, because I saw it on your Facebook. I thought I saw he was here, right, at your house.
Yeah, usually we're just tracking guitars for a new Fairmounts record, and that was. It's been a trip, man, because we haven't put a record out in 6 years. And as it goes, you're supposed to put records out less than 6 years apart. That's what the rules are.
Does that even matter anymore?
I don't know. My rules.
You know what's kind of cool about music right now is I don't think it's really got to be about making music and having fun, because no one's making money. Yeah. So it's like you really just have to really dig it for playing music, you know, and that's kind of cool in a way, I think.
Yeah, there's two thoughts of it, you know, like when there was a time when people had to put records out to make money, there was sort of, there seemed to be a different approach to it, like, I understand, like, being under the gun can sometimes create two occurrences. It can be like you can block and not do anything right, or you can come up with the best record ever. So, you know, and when you put yourself under that pressure, like, for instance, for this Fairmounts record, I wanted to give us 2 days to record the whole record, because that's what punk rock records are. They're supposed to be recorded really fast. Turns out it's going to be like a 6 day. It's a 6 day, 2 day record. That's what we're going with. But to put yourself into that pressure and to say, we need to get this done, and it feels right, you know, and because we've put ourselves under this, I've put us under this constraint, A, because I have no time, and B, the last time we did a record, it took months and months and months, and we got a little bit done here, because of what you were saying, there's no real pressure, and, you know, so I really wanted to really push things out fast.
The other thing, too, is, like, back in the day, it's like, you never really had any money, so that was the whole thing with, like, when recording, right? It's like, oh my God, we got like 2 days. Mm-hmm. It's going to cost like $1,500. Like, we got to knock this out. You know what I mean? And you just kind of did it by necessity. You just had no choice. You just kind of had to do it. You know?
Yeah. Uncommon Society is early 90s, right?
Early 90s. Yeah. I had a really funny thought the other day. I had a really funny thought. Remember that time I came down and tried to play drums with Kingpin and like failed miserably?
Well, I wouldn't call it a fail. It wasn't awesome, but I remember we picked you up in Oshawa, and I think I never told this story in front of people, but when we picked you up at the bus station, my van was parked out in front of the bus station.
Yeah.
And like this homeless guy comes up and goes, "Turn your fucking van off." I'm like, all right, so I switch it off, and then immediately you come out of the bus stop, and I turn it on, and I sort of put it in neutral a little bit, and rum, 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 and took off like an asshole. And then Al Nolan goes, "Go around the block." So we went around the block, and he's trying to punch the van as we're driving by. And that was your first hangout sesh with, because I don't think I really knew you as a person until that moment. So I mean.
I just had the most random thought the other day about the whole thing when we were talking on Facebook. I remember like, so fucking weird. Can I swear on this?
Absolutely. Yeah. Swear away.
It's like, I remember we were, I think, back at Al's house, and it was like really hot. I think I actually like went to the backyard and tanned. So weird, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, I remember doing it. It was terrible, but honestly, the whole experience I thought was awesome.
I don't know what it was. Like, I think...
No, I just wasn't good. I remember, who was the guy who played drums in...
It would have been Yard. Was this after the crash or before? Was this after we crashed our van?
This was before. What was... is it Jared, the old drummer?
First drummer? Yard.
Yard. He was really good.
He was really good, and I don't know why and how this came to be, and Al's probably yelling into his phone right now saying why, and I forget where we were with drummers, and I think maybe Yard had quit, or
yes.
Because he had hurt himself on the van tour when we crashed our van, and I think it was before that, because we had just, I don't remember.
No, it was before, because you went on tour with, before the crash is when you went on tour with Down by Law.
Yes.
And so you guys had called me, and something was going on with him, but then you got the Down by Law tour, and he agreed to play.
No, we got Relic. We got the guy. Relic played drums.
Oh, okay. No, I'm way off then. So, but I remember he had left, and then Al was in touch because he had heard the Uncommon Society tapes, and he foolishly thought I could play drums. And then I was in Ottawa, and then I was like, yeah, of course I'll come down to Oshawa. That'd be fun.
I remember how this went down, though. I used to drive elevator parts down to New York City, and I got a call from Al saying, "Oh, Yard's quit the band, and we're gonna get a new drummer," and something to the effect of. I said, "Okay, fine." And then you tried out, and Todd Laverty played with us, but Todd Laverty used to be in Five at Nothing. He could have been in the band, but I think he was just too nuts to be in the band. I think we already had three crazy people. We didn't need one more. And then you came and tried out, and we had this guy I went to high school with, Relic, who played drums. We ended up joining Not By Choice, if you remember that band.
I do, yeah.
Yeah, he was the original member of Not By Choice, which is another Ajax band. And we went on tour with Relic, and God bless Relic, but he was like, I don't know, he's a bit older than us. And he used to play in like a Zeppelin cover band. So yeah, like, okay. You know, I didn't really come from real punk rock roots either. Like I came from the suburbs like everybody. But Relic was like deeply entrenched in like Zeppelin but he was super, you know what, we toured with him, and there was so many times in a minivan. Yeah, and he was a pretty good drummer too, but it just turned into, and then he quit and we got Yard back. So that's how that worked out.
So entrenched in Zeppelin, but that would probably be as a drummer though, that's probably maybe a good thing, though, right? Kind of, in some ways? No?
Yes and no. I mean, Yard, actually, because Yard played probably more Bonham than anybody else, but it was just sort of a mentality thing where it was like, I don't think he really... I had so many reasons why Relic didn't work in our band, but then ended up being in Trigger Happy or in Kingpin at the time to sort of get himself into the scene, which is... That's kind of what I did too. I mean, we all kind of we used our scene to sort of propel us into new bands and things like that. And yeah,
Go ahead. Sorry,
I was going to say, like, what stopped Uncommon Society and Punchbag? It was kind of right after that, right?
Yeah. So yeah, sorry. And I'm really playing more talking to you, like catching up rather than actually talking about stuff, which is fun too. Yeah, so Uncommon Society basically, what did that end? That ended like 93.
Yeah.
But the thing is, we ended up recording, which ended up becoming the first Punch Buggy record. We essentially ended in the middle of recording the first Punch Buggy record. And the reason for the ending, it was one guy left, and then Jim Bryson, he ended up joining. So we kind of actually recorded about half of the album with... still a friend of mine, John Belanger, he was in the band.
Yeah.
He played with Bionic for a long time. So he quit, and then Jim joined, and then kind of like you mentioned earlier when you were talking about recording, Jim and I finished the record together, just him and I. We went in for one night, and we banged out like literally six or seven songs in one night, and him and I just recorded it right off the floor, and he played bass. And the reason why that was because the other two guys, they ended up going to Florida to go pick up a van that we ended up buying that we were going to use for tour. And by the time they came back, the album was done and Punch Buggy was a band.
I another random story about Uncommon Society is that I was on tour with Red Fisher and we were in Sacramento and we stopped off in this weird, it was like called the Canadian Bar or something. It was like this Canadian themed pub in Sacramento. And we pulled in and I think you guys either just played there or were left this imprint in Sacramento because they like said Canada Uncommon Society, like they equated Canada to your band, which I thought was pretty funny.
Which is so strange because it's the worst name ever.
So
it was funny when we used to be on those tours. I remember Andrew, who lives in Toronto, like, he's my best friend. He, on those tours, we made, I mean, like any band, you make no money, but they would always have those like 24-hour kind of grocery stores in the U.S., like in the early 90s, which are so foreign in Canada, you didn't have those. Mm-hmm. And we would go into these grocery stores, you know, literally like at 3 a.m. And I remember Andrew would literally stuff as much, you know, packaged meat into his pants as possible just to get out of there. And we would just go into these grocery stores and there'd only be people like, you know, stocking the shelves like at 3 a.m. And we would just go in and kind of eat, just not, you know, grab one thing, eat 10 things, you know, pay for one thing. And it kind of kept us alive. But yeah, yeah. We, Sacramento, I remember we played in Sacramento and I think, gosh, we might've made like $10, $15 gas money.
Well, yeah, you left an impression. I mean, it was interesting. The scene, we're like, yeah, that's our band. It was very funny, though, because we came through, and you guys either had been there like a couple of days before or whatever, but it was like the scene was like, yeah, that's our Canada with you guys.
You remember the time that I met up with you in Red Fisher with Chris Chikanen in Florida? You remember
that? I do. Oh, my God.
It was it was with Dave Sams, too. Do you remember that?
Yeah, I do now. I remember... Oh my God, that was crazy. I had mono that whole, that whole tour. Like, yeah, it was strep throat.
Yeah. I remember one time you were driving. We were in the Red Fisher van. We were driving, and I think Stuart might have, I don't know, he threw something at you.
That like lizards. Maybe, that was Tate, and he put
lizards.
And I was afraid, I still am to this day, petrified of like lizards and
I
serpents.
Feel so bad. Jump so high at that moment. I don't blame you. I hate anything like that too.
And Tate thought it was funny. And I heard the story later on because I remember that. You were in the van. Oh my God, that's so funny. Because either we're driving up to Gainesville or something or we were like taking you and dropping you off somewhere. But
me and Chris, yeah.
Yeah. And we're driving. And what Jason told me later on, because I didn't talk to him for like 2 days after, is that he let a lizard out and it jumped onto the headrest, which was like right by my head while I was driving. And he tried to grab it and it jumped into my lap. And I'm driving down the highway like, "Whoa, stop!" And I'm like, and I stopped, I pulled over, right? Or something. I just swept it off my, oh my God. I'm so funny. That's so funny you witnessed that. I was so scared.
Wasn't it that it was like a sort of red and silver Dodge type thing?
Yeah, it was all beat up. A beat up van that we didn't even have a radio. We put this radio out of my van. We took it out and just put it on the doghouse. The radio.
Yeah. I remember on that tour when I saw you guys. I think it wasn't Dave either friends or he played in a band with the guy who ended up the guitar player that ended up joining Down by Law.
Sam. Sam. Oh God, he's my Facebook friend. Sam. Yeah.
And then he literally joined Down by Law like pretty soon after that.
It wasn't even that long after, yeah. That was the show. I think that was the that I've told the story before, but we left Los Angeles and didn't have any shows between Los Angeles and Florida, and all we had to do was play the show that Dave Sams had put on in Florida, I think Clearwater somewhere. And we were driving, and I didn't drive all the way until like Louisiana. I had really, really, I was had strep throat, and I couldn't breathe properly, and I was just couldn't, everything was, my body was so fucked up. And then we stopped at New Orleans to drive, to look around, because none of us had really seen New Orleans before, and we were there for like 3 or 4 hours. And when we pulled into that show in Florida, we were exactly 4 hours late for the show. So... we missed the show. We drove all the way across North America to play one show, and we missed it by the exact amount of time we went sightseeing.
Oh, dude. Yeah, it's funny. I remember we drove down to meet you. I was with Chris. We went to go see. We were in Baltimore. We drove to Baltimore. We saw Doughboys. Oh, no. So we saw all the day before. Then we saw Doughboys and Jawbox play in Baltimore. And then we drove the rest of the way, and we just met up with you guys. We hung out with some dude that Chris knew in Tampa. We stayed there for a little bit, skated, and then we ended up driving back. That was like 1993, 92.
I'd say 92, around 92 or 93. You're right. It's funny. I'd never met Chris at that point. Joe Kinnan, I ended up being a band with him when I moved back to Toronto. We were in Self Serve together.
So you were in Self Serve? Crazy. Yeah. I remember him telling me, what's Chris doing these days? Is he around?
I haven't talked to him in a very, very long time. But where we used to practice, I work like right around the corner from where we used to practice in Richmond Hill, because it was not that far for me to drive. And that's John Drew played in that band, who's like a
great friend of mine, old friend of mine.
John. Yeah, great, great drummer and a great producer too. Did like Tokyo Police Club stuff and Chris. And I didn't really know Chris, and I didn't know Chris knew Dave. That was the weird thing, because I kind of blocked it out of my head. And then I didn't really know John at that point. And then somehow it worked out. Either I forget who put us together, but it turned out that Chris was, I thought Chris was an American, because I didn't know he was from, like, I didn't know the whole story when we were all hanging out together. And then I didn't know he was a singer. I didn't know. So I ended up, when I moved back to Toronto, I was still in Red Fisher, and I was going to go back eventually, which I never did. But I ended up joining Self Serve, and we recorded this record. And it actually sounded pretty good. It turned out really well, actually.
So wait, Chris sang in Self Serve, right?
That's right. Yeah,
that's cool. Crazy. Yeah, John's a great dude too. He's like super old friend from Ottawa. Such a good guy.
He's a good guy. Yeah, no, he's a good guy. I haven't talked to him in a while. He's I haven't talked to him in a while too. I see him on Facebook around. That's where we see each other. I mean, Facebook's that place you sort of go by and you go, oh, hey, that's where you are. You're there.
Yeah.
And I probably, what would this world be without it? You know, if you think about it, like, how disconnected would this world be? I mean, in a way, if you think about it, looking for the good
in
part.
In a way, yeah. To be honest, I mean, you know, because we connected recently because what's going on here, but I don't really go on very often, to be honest.
Yeah.
I'm more on the Instagram.
Yeah, I can't get Instagram. I don't understand it. My kids are on Snapchat. I don't get that at all. I thought it was the thing you showed your wiener on. I thought that's what Snapchat was for, but turns out it's not. It's for, like, my daughter sends me Snapchat things. I'm like, I don't understand how this works. It's I think a messaging system. I don't know.
Yeah, I love Instagram. I have a business down here, but I mean, I love it just for, I take so much photos, and a lot of the business is sort of related to SoCal culture and whatnot. But yeah, I love from the picture aspect. But yeah. Facebook, Facebook I've been on a lot recently, but generally I'm not very on very much.
Yeah, my buddy Casey Armstrong comes down there a lot and he does. He's actually doing. You know him. You must know him then.
I don't know. Yeah, sorry. Yes. I don't know him personally. I've known him sort of indirectly from John Kassner, but. I've seen his photos, and he came out here to do a whole series on
skateboarders.
Yeah, it's been awesome. Been loving it.
Yeah,
so good.
Yeah, he's great. He actually has an apartment down there. He travels down quite a bit and works down there in that area. And he was, when I was there in May, he was there working. So we actually didn't really connect, but it was like, it was so LA, because like we're both in LA, but we didn't see each other. That's so LA.
You gotta come down. When's the last time you've been down?
I came down with my daughter in May, and we went to Disney for like 3 days.
Nice.
It was fun. Yeah, it was fun because my daughter, she's 12, and it was one of those things like, she's now 12. She was 11 then, but it was one of those things like, when you're 13 and you hate my guts, you're going to have to remember this great time we had, and I think it's proactive. It was proactive in my endeavor.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, you can't beat the weather. The weather's amazing.
Yeah, so when did you move down there? Because I've seen, like, did you move down for work, or did you chase the dream? And how?
Kind of a long story, but the short story was I came down, I've been coming down since I was about 15, but I came down kind of officially, like, around 2007, and then met my wife in 2009, and yeah, been here ever since.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And what are you doing? Like, what's your job?
When I lived in Canada, so I was an art director. So when Punch Buggy ended around 2001 ish, mm-hmm. Andrew went back to school, and that's my dog. He went back to school, and I was always in graphic design for a really long time. So I was an art director, agency art director, and did a lot of that down here. And then I started this company called The Poster List. Basically t-shirt and poster company. We sell pretty much to everyone down here, and that's it. That's what I do.
Wow. Yeah. Man, yeah. That's so cool. My buddy Andreas lives down there too. He started a thing called Casting Frontier that does online casting. He sort of pioneered the thing 15 years ago, 10 years ago.
Oh, cool. Yeah. It's there's I mean, it's crazy. There's so much opportunity down here. I mean, there's a lot of things that, you know, obviously we've talked about kind of recently that suck being down here, healthcare being one of them. But yeah, there's so much opportunity, and there's obviously about 10 times the amount of people. I've been in Canada pretty much all my whole life, and I love Canada, but I just got tired of the wintertime.
Yeah, well, where my buddy Andres lives, he lives close to the Griffith Observation area, like that neighborhood. And that neighborhood could be East Vancouver, like the East Hastings, kind of like a nice part of Vancouver, like sort of Nanaimo area. Like,
am I able to pause for 1 second?
Sure.
Yeah. This is my wife, Rochelle.
Hi. How you doing?
Hi, Rochelle. Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you, too. It's I've known Adam for, oh, my God, it's almost 30 years now.
Almost. Oh, wow. Yeah. Turns out he knows a lot of people.
That's true. My gosh, this whole fundraising thing is, I'm so.
It's really good that he didn't burn his bridges because we really needed the help.
It's amazing. What I mean, that it's a truly remarkable thing. Like, Adam, it's a testament in like just good nature. Being a good person is a part of this. You know what I mean? Don't shake your head.
Oh, I know. And actually, like, I mean, I think he sat in his office for 3 days doing this, so I don't want to start crying, but it's just one of those things.
Yeah. Well,
you need it more than you realize you need it. You know, we're definitely not an island, and, you know, I thought that I just would have never imagined.
Yeah.
So it's a really wonderful thing to see such a beautiful side of people that don't even know me that have been willing to help our cause.
It's an amazing thing.
Yeah, it's been so, we're so incredibly blessed, and that everyone's been so great. And yeah, pretty much everywhere, Toronto, Ottawa, like California, everyone's been great. Unbelievable.
Yeah, I even saw like Tom Green posting and people really rose to it. You know what I mean? Like it's you know, I really think.
Thank you, man.
Yeah,
oh man, don't no. Listen, this is, we're all a community here. You know what I mean? Like we all. This is, to me, I mean, that's, we were talking about Facebook not even that long ago, and how Facebook is to me, there's good parts of Facebook that sort of like I want to keep. To me, you know what I mean? That these are the good things. This community effect, and there's the other part where you get those crazy people posting other things that you're like, really? We don't need your political points of view. And Facebook is about cats. We should make it more about cats hanging on trees, you know? and more, you know, cuddly and nice. It's a community, you know what I mean? And I'm so glad that, I mean, like, I think I checked your GoFundMe. It's like not even $500 away from making its target in 3 days.
Yeah. It's pretty amazing. The whole thing has, like, we really haven't had words, you know, watching it all happen, too. I mean, most of it, you know, Adam did a lot of work to get the word out, but then, you know, it was like some people we didn't even know donated.
Yeah.
That, to me, says a lot. We want to, I mean, we've talked about, we're definitely going to keep these things in mind moving forward, and after we get through this, then we want to pay that forward to people, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a whole other, you have this other job ahead of you too, which is, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's part of it that people are empathetic about, you know, because it's just the fact that you know, the money, it still has to go. You still have to go through this process to be better. And
unfortunately, it's not affordable. You know, it's always one of those things in the back of your mind, like, okay, I have health insurance, but I don't know what we would do if anything bad really happened, because, you know, just like everybody, we're struggling and we stay afloat. We're proud of ourselves for staying afloat, but we're not really getting ahead. And this is you know, one of those times.
It's so expensive in California, living in general. And with even, again, like, we have insurance, but, you know, our deductibles and our max out of pay per year is fairly, it's not crazy, but it's pretty expensive nonetheless. Mm-hmm. It's a lot to do, you know, so
and, like, you know, it's like, I had never, like, Adam doesn't get sick, I don't get sick, we never go to the doctor. I don't have, recently my mom got diagnosed with breast cancer, but I mean, I don't have any cancer in my family other than my mom on either side's like period. Mm. And so that was one of those things too, where I thought with my mom getting breast cancer, it would be, I don't know why, my mom's a heavy drinker, so I kind of thought, well, maybe she brought that on a little bit herself, maybe this, maybe that, but unfortunately, there's no rhyme or reason for these things, and that's what I'm kind of learning, because, like, she and I, it could be genetic, it could not be genetic, and that's what I'm learning, too. It's just luck of the draw, you know?
Yeah, so. Yeah, and, like, yeah, I'm glad that there's hope for humanity in this, because you look at things, you know, and I kind of bore people with the whole metaphors of driving, and there's a lot of assholes out there. You can tell just by people driving around, and that is a whole, it defies that, because it doesn't mean, it just meant that, you know, I don't know, you've done something right somewhere, I think, and it all came back to you, you know?
It's been incredible.
I just feel really, really, really lucky, and we have a lot of gratitude every day. Mm-hmm. And you know what? It makes me feel stronger.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the biggest things I immediately felt, like, well, I have a lot of people I don't know that I don't want to let down, you know, and that's good. It's good.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Yeah. And I have a few other friends that are going through things, and it's like, I feel, and I'm myself, I've gone through health things too. And it's like, you're like, why, you know, why me, and how did this work out? And, you know, well, there's a reason for everything, you know what I mean? And I'm not spiritual. I don't really believe in sort of God and heaven and a pitchfork. And, you know, I just think that you'd sort of win with karma. I believe in that, you know what I mean? And it all comes around, you know what I mean? And you know, that's, it's very cool. I'm, you know, and I mean, there's still, like I said, there's a whole other part of this now that has to get dealt with. And,
yeah.
You know, I guess you have the strength from your peers and from people you never even met before.
Yeah. 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 It's a motivating force, and we are taking, you know, all you can do is take it step by step and day by day. But, someone who I talked to that has survived a pretty terrible cancer, she told me to look for the blessings because they're there. And I keep thinking of that. It really has stuck with me, because I wish that it could have stuck with me more before this too. And mm-hmm. I think it's just one of those things, but the blessings are really there, and this is one of them. And it's like, a lot of cool things have happened because of this. And now it's just going to be the crappy part. But I mean, my family's come together more, friends have come together more. It's a really beautiful thing to know that your life really wasn't as full as you thought it was without these people. And I'm glad to have experienced that, even if it was for this terrible thing. Not that I would ever wish it again, but either way, you know?
Yeah. So. Yeah. It's okay if I use this on the podcast, right?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Because I've been recording the whole time.
Oh, yeah, it's fine. I'm going to go make dinner. Thank you again.
Yes, thank you.
For everything.
Keep strong.
Thank you.
Yeah,
it's crazy. We really... the support has been unbelievable, and we're both the same. We're not religious people, and really a sense of anything. But the love that people, you know, have provided, and you know, it's been really great too. The stories that you know, people have provided about surviving, you know, cancer, very similar kinds of cancer Rochelle has, and you know. That makes such a difference, right? Because I mean, you can really relate on a real time level. So it's been helpful, and it's not just about money. Money is obviously a great thing, but the love and support, and you know, and I'm not saying that in a cliche way, but there's been so many people that, you know, all they can do is give us a story. Awesome, that's great too. You know, it's really been incredible. So.
Absolutely. Last year, I did the Toronto ride to conquer cancer, and we rode from Toronto to Niagara Falls in 2 days. And to me, the most emotional part of it all was seeing the flags of the survivors, like people who had survived cancer, and it was amazing, because I rode with a guy who had lymphoma, and like 15 years ago, it'd be a death sentence. He'd be dead. But yeah. They've gone so far with how to treat things. I mean, if anything, optimistic. Now's the time to be optimistic about it, because they can work wonders. It's amazing what they've done. And I did this ride, and I got really kind of emotional about it, because it was like the fact, just to see people who had done it, there was a reason to do it. And it was like, I was challenging myself physically, as well as, you know, I was trying to do my part to raise money and awareness, but all of that was like all every minute of that ride was like every type of emotion was like, oh, there goes a guy riding by me who's got a, you know, he's at the flag. And I always thought the flag was a bit of a, you know, a slowing down device. It's like, why are you giving him flags? Because you're slowing him down, you know. But yeah, it was very rewarding, you know what I mean? Like, to the point that I could do it again, but it was like one of those things, like, will I have the same, the effect to it? Because it does kind of like how you put into it. If you, it made me feel great, but also I slept the whole way home. Like, it was exhausting. Riding a bike is exhausting.
I know. How was your butt after?
It wasn't bad. It wasn't bad. I had a pretty good seat. But one thing I noticed, like, when someone told me, like, because I just basically took like a shitty Walmart bike and I put better handlebars on it. And turns out the equipment does help in that case. If you had a nicer bike, it's actually easier to ride.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Because I was riding and I'm exhausted. I was so tired. Like, we stopped the first day for lunch and I couldn't straighten my legs out. So I was like getting worried that we get back on the bike. I'm like, oh my God, I can't ride my bike right now. And it was like everything was starting to fail on me. And I'm like, and then, you know what I mean? Some dude rides by with the flag. I'm like, okay, I can't puss out now. I have to do this. Like, I have to.
Puss out.
I can't puss out. Yeah, yeah. But yeah, I mean, it definitely changes my perspective when, you know, a personal friend goes through something like this, that everybody needs to do something. Everybody needs to, like you say, pay forward and give in. I mean, I think there is a level of empathy from that. It was like, man, as Canadians, you know what I mean? Like, God, it sucks because of what would happen up here is that you'd be treated.
My dad had prostate cancer, and he was in. But see, the funny thing is, being down here, particularly over the last 10 years, they really politicize, you know, socialized healthcare in a way which I feel is so wrong, you know, in a sense that they always make it seem like the wait times are super long. And so my dad had prostate cancer. He didn't really have very long of a wait, to be honest. It was pretty short. I was still in Canada when he just had his prostate removed. He was in the hospital for a little bit, and he's cancer-free. But that's the only thing I find that's really frustrating being here in the United States is, I think the thing is, in the United States, they've sold the U.S. citizens on freedom of choice, freedom of choice of healthcare provider and all these things. Like, they have 10 times the amount of population. I mean, whether you're rich or poor, everyone wants to live, right? They don't want to die. And unfortunately, there's this thing here. It's everyone. It's every man for themselves here in the United States, and I think that sucks in a sense because there's so much power of the people here, and I think it could really be different. But I think ultimately, it's so money based that it's all about money and it's all about choice that they've been fed to the people. You know, you want to choose your doctor. You know, and down here, sometimes I've driven up to San Francisco for different things. You can't, you know, I throw on like AM talk radio to hear. I'm super liberal, mm-hmm. but I listen to conservative talk radio just to hear the other side. And some of it's interesting, but I've always heard the stuff when they talk about socialized healthcare in Canada, and they make it so wrong, and they make it sound like it's, you know, being from Canada, I know what it's like. Mm-hmm. But they make it seem like if we had it in the United States, it would be the worst thing ever. And, you know, you're going to get screwed. And why would you want to do that? And it's just like, it's about taking 350 million people and helping your fellow man. Yeah. You know, I mean, that's really what it is. And it's so frustrating that it's got to be so complicated. But it probably will never happen here.
I mean, they've chosen a side. There's a side chosen in how they think this is going to work. And when you make a decision on a choice, you can't go back on it. You can't say, you know what? We were wrong. Maybe. Ah, my camera.
Ah, the camera.
My camera fell and it turned off. Sorry. I don't know how that happened. But they've chosen a side. And the side is, we have to keep the status quo with this. We have to go with this because if we don't, we've been making the wrong decision for 200 years.
Well, also though, but there's so much pressure from the insurance companies and everyone else that it's so money driven that it's, you know what I mean? Like the pressure to change, it'd be so difficult to change, you know what I mean? Because money and politics that are sort of hand in hand, you know, it's, it sucks really.
Yeah. I'm going to reload this page because I want to see your face.
Okay. I can't see you. Yeah. All I'm seeing is a screenshot of you.
Yeah. There we go. Coming back. There we are. There we go.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, we're back. Yeah, and did you ever consider like coming up to Canada and just sort of emigrating for a little bit? And
we didn't think about it, actually. We looked into it a little bit, and who knows what may happen after this, you know, as we get through treatment, because this is obviously going to be more than a – it's going to be a multi-year thing, right?
Yeah.
I mean, we own our house that we're living in right now, and my business down here. But even so, I'm an American citizen, so I have two passports. So for me to go back to Canada, like for example, if I got cancer, I would have to be in the country for 6 months minimum before I can even take advantage of getting free health care. Yeah. So with Rochelle, it would be at least that long, if not longer. Through the immigration process. So it's just a time thing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And our support system's down here, and her job's here, my job's here, and what we've got. And but honestly, we did think about it, you know. It's crazy. We did.
Yeah. And without being treated, it can be bad, really bad.
It's pretty aggressive. So I mean, we've been doing a lot of work over the last month and a little bit, because we've had to, and a lot of tests, and we were kind of worried that we were actually taking too much time. So the next week and a half is going to be a last test, last scan, and then we're right into chemo and stuff. So
that's wow. You know, I think, you know, how lucky I am, you know, to have people in my family who don't have to go through that, you know, and I feel so bad that it's like, It feels that it's like, that's wrong. You know what I mean? Like, and did you feel any anger out of it? Or is it sort of like a,
did you just come? First couple of days, just really super emotional. And why did this happen? You know, she went into work, and then she called me in the morning when she got they called her with the results of her biopsy that she had. And she just went just because she had turned 40, and she just went because she had felt under her arm. She thought she was using this natural deodorant for a while, and she thought maybe it was a weird reaction. And so she went and she got a test on it, and she got her mammogram. And yeah, they were concerned, and they wanted an ultrasound, and they did a list, and they did a biopsy. And yeah, I was sad, angry, shocked, probably all three at once, you know, like what's going on. And then it kind of hit harder the next couple days. And then it was like, a lot of everything, a lot of crying, a lot of, why us, like, you know, the whole bit, like, you know,
and then eventually
she never gets sick, you know, she never gets sick. So,
and then eventually you got to kind of go, okay, this is enough time. You've put enough time into feeling about this. Now you have to get logical about it, and you have to sort of go and fight this thing and you know, and win.
Yeah. And that's what we did. And so like Rochelle was saying, I mean, I hope this is kind of informative, I guess, but
it totally is, dude. Like this is your life, and you know, you're an important part of, you know what I mean? Like, the scene and how you came into this, and knowing your story is definitely very important.
Thanks, man. I mean, so Rochelle's mom had breast cancer, so she dealt with it on the holistic end. So initially we were kind of looking at it on the holistic end, and kind of went through a period of that. And then also going to Western medicine oncologist and what have you. And yeah, just a lot of tests. I mean, it's a confusing time, and it's a lot of stuff. And one thing I will say, which as an observer being, you know, like being from Canada, and I'm in every doctor's appointment, everything on either side, Western and holistic, I have to say again, like talking about what's so strange, so money driven down here, that both holistic and otherwise, like, you really kind of come away from it people are really caring. The doctors are extremely caring, but sometimes, like, you really just don't know. Are you really giving me advice to help us, or are you just looking to make more money? Like, honestly, and it sounds weird saying that, but it did. It was like almost every place we went to, on both sides, there was so much upsell. Like, people wanted to get us into tests without explaining them almost immediately. It's kind of like, oh, okay, you want us to go into a $12,000 test right now? Can you tell us why we have to do it and what exactly this is? Like, it was crazy.
Anyway, is that holistic or was that from
both? Both, all kinds of stuff. It's like, let's do this regimen for, IV for, 2 times a week for 6 weeks. How much is that going to cost? Well, that's going to be $6,000.
Oh, my God.
We need to pump the brakes a little bit on this. You know, it was crazy. So we were trying to find people that really just like, look, can you give us some legitimate information and not sell us on something, you know? And that was a real struggle for a while. And we had a lot of recommendations from a lot of friends. It was different. That was the thing that's so different between that and Canada, you know? There's no underlying current of money. I mean, doctors in Canada are getting paid, but, different. Well,
the biggest sort of controversy in Canadian medicine is, do you use generics or do you use brand name?
Yeah.
Are like a third of the price and brand name is obviously not.
I mean, there's a huge amount of markup on chemotherapy down here. I mean, massive, like 300% markup. I mean, you know, so are people in business to help people or are they in business to line their pockets? Cancer is big business, unfortunately. Sucks, you know.
Yeah,
terrible disease.
Yeah, I find it very hard to try to digest because it goes against basically it kind of goes against some doctoral oaths. I get doctors are good at doing what they do. Doctors are supposed to get paid well to do what they do, but when you put them into a price structure saying, well, this guy's the best, so he's going to be the best, it's like, well, all right, well, why should, you know what I mean? Like, okay, I get it. He's the best. He's going to, but he gets the same training as the other guy who might, I don't know. You know, there's other things that come in as I'm stopping myself going, yeah, you know what? There's really good taxi drivers and really shitty taxi drivers. I mean,
yeah,
they're still taxi drivers.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's, you just really want, like, you're when something like this hits, you know, for both myself and Rochelle, I mean, for Rochelle in particular, obviously, like, you just want someone like, look, do you care about me as to what's going on with me? Like, are you not, you know, do you care about me or do you see me as a dollar sign? You know, and it was really hard, you know.
Do you ask them that question straight up? You ever ask them that question? Like, what's my name?
We actually called a lot of people out on a lot of stuff. I think sometimes we went to a couple of really well-known holistic places with the expectations that we were going to be in some ways treated, I guess, a little bit different than we felt on a few different Western medicine places. But I mean, we were at one facility and they took us on an entire tour. Like, I looked at Rochelle and I was like, wow, this feels like the biggest upsell ever. You know, it's like, you know, and it was like taking us to cryogenic hyperbolic chambers and all this kind of stuff. And I was like, this is crazy. You know, like hundreds of thousands of dollars that we don't have. And, you know, it's like, look, I just want someone to sit down with my wife, tell her what she has, tell her she's going to be okay, or tell her how we need to attack this, you know, not how many things we need to pay for that she really doesn't need, you know?
Well, when you take the big sell out of it, this is one thing in Canada's favor is that it turns into a direct approach saying,
definitely,
you know, here's what works. Here's what you can try. And then you can go to another country where they might do it in somebody's backyard that might save your life too. I mean, at least there's sort of options where there's certain countries that sort of changed, you know, when they talk about, this isn't to do with cancer, but when it deals with things like getting hip replacements and getting certain things done, there's certain places down in, Central America that do things and do it well because they're regimented to this. You know what I mean? That sort of the rules, I guess.
Yeah, right? Same here. I mean, there's a lot of cancer approaches that aren't on the holistic side. They're sort of like delegitimized, but aren't FDA approved. But you know, there's been success stories. So we've been trying to take both of those,
right,
you know, but get an idea of, you know, so we're sort of approaching both sides of it, but the bulk of it's going to be chemo and surgery and stuff. So.
Yeah, part of holistic medicine and, you know, things like that, I do unfortunately have like a, I don't know, if someone said to me, you have two choices, you take all the pills from the big pharmacy or other things I don't know, so I'm not even going to make an example. I think I'd go with probably big pharma. I mean, unfortunately, right?
And it's, and you know what, I think a lot of the first month was like kind of corroborating a lot of the info about stuff like that, you know, like checking out the stuff against holistic, checking this stuff and getting, it was really informing ourselves on a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
And
you almost have to know the conversation when you go into it too, because if you came in without any sort of like investigation into the subject, then it would be like you'd be cheating yourself because all these things would fly over your head.
Yeah, no, totally. I mean, our doctor that we're using, he's actually we're using this doctor, Dr. Nagorny, and he's really well known, and he's all pretty much Western, but he does subscribe to a couple holistic kind of levels of it, and he's been great. And but he said, he's like, look, you've got an aggressive cancer. We're going to have to do chemo, but we can do a couple things to actually specify the kind of chemo that, you know, you're going to use, and we're going to test it on a sample rather than giving you chemo
for the sake of
to your body for the sake of testing it and see, you know, in a month if it works and we'll readjust. Instead, we're going to take a sample. We'll test the chemo on the sample, make sure it has the most like refined effect, and we're not making you a guinea pig, you know, and we're going out of the gate 100% like attacking this cancer the most effectively we can on a chemo level. And that's what we're doing with him. And he's been excellent in that. But I mean, you know, Rochelle was kind of hoping when we went to see him, he has like maybe a 10% holistic, he would say, oh, you don't need chemo. But he was like, no, you got a very aggressive cancer. You need chemo. So.
Yeah, and hearing the hard truth is definitely like, it's you need to raise concern. Because if they go, you'll be fine.
Yeah. Yeah, we've had some holistic people that have tested Rochelle who said she doesn't have cancer. And
what?
Yeah, literally.
You're healed.
Yeah. Yeah, and we're kind of like, I'm looking at it kind of going, this is.
Yeah, let's get out of here. Let's get out of here.
It's crazy stuff.
Man, oh man. Well, like I said, man, this is a definitely something to think about, like how people, you know, when someone gets really sick, there's a friend of mine who's very sick, and I think about it, and I go, okay, I'm going for extra walks. I'm going to take care of myself, you know what I mean? Because you can't stop certain things, like certain things, genetics take over at that point, you know, like, so for instance, if you have heart history, then heart problems, generally there's reasons for it. But you can do everything you can to stop what's going to possibly be the inevitable. You know, mm-hmm. We're getting old, man. Like, I mean, I'm 48 years old. 48.
I'm turning 48 in April, so yeah. I'm not far behind.
And, you know, it feels... It is interesting because, like, would you think when you're 20 years old, like, when I'm 48, I'm going to be, you know what I mean? Like, and, you know, and it's sort of, it does come to sort of what this show's about. It's sort of like, who were you and who are you now? And how close to being who you were are you now? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, when it comes to your attitude and, you know, I have a half pipe in my front yard, but I don't ride it.
Nice.
Yeah. I built a mini ramp.
You have a ramp in your front?
Yeah, I built one for my son. But he just got into skateboarding, but he was doing the scootering.
Okay.
Which I was like, nah, yeah, a little shame.
It's like somehow the scooter got misplaced somewhere.
Yeah. The handlebar fell off. It's just a skateboard now.
That's cool. You're basically the cool dad.
Well, yes and no. I mean, like... Yes, in to an extent, but my son's 15, so I'm just an old man right now. He calls me father.
You're the old man cool dad that bought a half pipe, played in the punk rock, still plays in the punk rock band and a country band.
Yeah. So I don't wanna go, you know what I mean? I don't wanna play the card. But when it comes to like dealing with teenagers, I feel closer to like I feel better, like up to about 10 years ago is when I still kind of felt the same. And then after I turned like 40, like in sort of, you know, things sort of went, yeah, I got to grow up. You know what I mean? I got to sort of be more responsible and take care of myself more and try to be a better person. I mean,
yeah,
there was a definite, because we're musicians. Like we are inherently selfish. You know what I mean? Like, especially like, I don't know, but I guess you're sort of playing in Punch Buggy. Did you play in any of the bands after Punch Buggy? What was it? Right?
No.
Yeah.
No. I mean, I played with Jim. Jim and I played in a band just before Punch Buggy during Punch Buggy called Chuck Wagon.
Yeah.
It was just like, we didn't do very much. It was kind of like, it was three piece, kind of Lemonheads-y ish.
Yeah.
Just did it for fun.
But did you get to the point where it's like, yeah, I gotta change things. Like, was that what music, did you realize that music priority wise, did you lose folk? Like your priority?
I always loved playing music. I think the thing with music, I mean, I still play music. I mean, just at home, but, with Punch Buggy, with Andrew leaving, it just, he wanted, well, Jim left in 96, 97. And then we kind of continued for four or five more years. But, I mean, the thing with playing in a band, like, you know, it's like, you can be as driven as you want to be, but if you've got other people and they're not as driven, or if they get less driven, you're only as good as the other people if they're driven too. So, I mean,
yeah.
You know, I know personally for myself, I can only say, I know I can be the hardest worker ever. Probably the same way Al could say the same thing.
Yeah.
You know, Al's an incredibly hard worker, you know, and I know he is. But the thing is if you have other people around you that maybe, I don't know, they've got other priorities, which is understandable as you get older, then you just decide to move on, you know? And that's the thing. It's unless you want to become like a solo act, I guess.
Yeah. The thing about that I realized that, I mean, Punch Buggy was just somewhat for the better part a successful independent band. Like, the people knew who you were, the scene. But what I noticed in what, for me, after, you know, Foursquare kind of stopped being a band, and what I was told by the people who had eventually quit Foursquare was that it's incredibly hard to start a new band. You know what I mean?
Totally. Like,
you know, yeah, how totally. Many years you put into it to get to the part where you're at. So a lot of people, it discouraged a lot of people after, like, because I went through a few members that, you know, people came up to me 4 or 5 years later going, I can't believe we did what we did. I can't believe that happened. I'm like, yeah, but we really put a lot of work into it. And he goes, yeah, and certain people would be like, you know what? I didn't want to try and start again. Like, I just, you know what I mean? Like, it just didn't become as, like, fuck, is so much work.
Yeah, it's also life priorities too, right? I mean, it's something, a lot of things shift. I mean, you know, you've got kids and you've got other things, and you know what I mean? Like, things shift. It doesn't mean that your love is changed for it. It's just priorities shift. I mean, it's just getting older, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, I think, I mean, we'll see how our next year goes, of course, with what we're dealing with right now. But so next year will be the 25th anniversary of our first album. So we've spoken that we were going to do it this year, actually. They have the Bose Oktoberfest in Bankley Kilts.
Yeah.
And Jim has a record that just came out, and we're going to do it this year, but it kind of just, the timing wasn't good with his record coming out and everything. He's doing so many shows and stuff. So I think next year we actually might play a bunch of shows up in Canada. I think probably going to, I mean, it's not confirmed, but I think the idea is we're going to coincide it with that album coming out, and we're going to do like Bose, and I don't know. We might go to the Townhouse in Sudbury or something. I don't know.
Still
play. We're going to probably play Toronto, and I don't know, just do a handful of shows just for fun. You know, maybe no one will come out, but who cares? We're just going to have fun.
That's awesome. I've been on the waiting list to get on that Bose thing for 3 years now. I thought we were going to be on last year, but Kevin forgot that we were a band. So when Kevin said, okay, next year, but he said that 2 years ago, next year for sure. And I'm like, okay, it's next year. Oh, wait. Oh, shit.
So wait a minute. So is it going to be the Fairmount?
Yeah, I wanted to be the Fairmounts, but I was actually, I was originally selling it with myself, Connor from a band called Boys Night Out. Singer and a bass player friend of mine, John Ronson from The Reason, And my buddy Mike Indovita played in the Cheap Suits. It was going to be this sort of band, and it was like, we're going to put 7 or 8 songs out, and we were going to go play. I wanted to play the Bows thing, and then I immediately said, no, this should be a Fairmounts thing. And it was too late at that point. So maybe, I mean, we're putting a new record out. So I told Kevin that I wanted to do it next year. So, I know, right? So if you do that, let's figure it out where we share a van and do it like real punk rock, where we can share drum kit, share a van, share instruments. Because if you're coming up, I know Jim's got stuff too. Like, he's got instruments and he's got amps and drums and whatnot, but it would be super fun to go and play like 5 or 6 shows with you guys and then go do it like Montreal, Ottawa, Sudbury and Sault Ste. Marie and Toronto.
That'd be so fun. How fun would that be?
I think it'd be the best.
That would be really cool. Seriously, we should talk about that. That would be kind of rad.
Yeah. I've already done the shows. I've already booked them.
Do you remember the band Hot Piss, Blake?
Yeah.
Okay, so Blake's a friend of ours. He runs that place, House of Targ in Ottawa.
Okay.
They do bands there all the time, and it's like a big arcade, and it's supposed to be a rad venue. But they wanted to play too. It'd be fun if we set up a show and they played, and all three of us play like that shop in Ottawa or whatever. Anyway, we'll figure it out.
Yeah, man.
We'll do this off podcast time.
Yeah, we'll talk. Well, hey, I'm going to let you go, but we're going to talk after. So I'm going to hit stop now. So thanks for doing the show, man. And that was Mr. Adam Ludica of Punch Buggy, also of now from the United States. He's from the United States. Adam from the United States. Adam, come home. You guys got to come home. Come back to Canada. We'll take care of you. We're not mad. We're just upset. No. We're not mad, we're just disappointed. That's the worst thing to say to people. Great show, great dude, and a fun conversation. Sorry, this is coming a little bit later on Monday. I'm a busy person. I don't know if you know about this, but I do 100 different things, and I'm always doing something. And I'm sorry that the podcast is not coming out at 3 in the morning, Eastern Standard Time, as per usual. But it's just the way she goes, folks. You have to take the good with the bad, take the both, and there you have Facts of Life. So thanks for doing the show, Adam, and thanks for everybody for supporting the show on Patreon by going to patreon.com/apolog. You can help the show out, and thanks for all the Amazon shoppers. Some people keep buying cookware. I noticed there's cookware being sold. What else? What's happening? I got a few episodes coming in. Some good people to talk to. I got some recording to do. I got some inventions. I got some servo-controlled inventions I've made that I will be showing the world eventually. And, so everybody, have a great week. We'll see you in the next time. Thank you so much. Bye.